You're not going to believe this, but I suffer from Christmas tree anxiety. I know there are a lot of armchair psychiatrists out there. In a place like this, everybody wants to hear you tell stories, so you must be psychiatrists of some sort. And if you were a psychiatrist, you would probably look to childhood and say, well, what is the root of this neurosis? And I take a deep breath and I tell you that, well, I grew up in the shadows of St. Ambrose Roman Catholic Church in Northwest Baltimore, and I never had a Christmas tree. My parents just didn't get Christmas trees. Now, I can't really blame them because, you know, we were Jewish, so this wasn't... I got a train. Every year around that time, which we would call Hanukkah, of course, my father would set up this little Lionel train set around the legs of the dining room table, and I was just fascinated. Just one loop and a little tiny inside one where you would unload the logs from the one little car that logs. I mean, you know, it's probably worth $10,000 now. It's a really good Lionel, but it's a little track. But Christmas was something that was a little bit alien to me. One day, my father took me across the street where there was a Jewish guy who was living with his family, except his wife was Catholic, and they had 12 kids. My father said, I'm going to show you what Christmas looks like. And I went into the house, and there was like this huge tree, there was gift wrap everywhere, there were presents being thrown around, played with, broken. Upstairs was the wife, and she was in bed with number 12. She was nursing the baby, and this was like my first vision of Madonna. Not like, you know, any painting you've ever seen, but, you know, it was a little crazy. I had an uncle who had a Christmas tree, but he was Catholic, and he married a Jewish woman. And Christmas is something that once you have it, it's hard to put it down. He always had a Christmas tree, and he even had a bigger train set. Well, my mother wondered one time, she asked me, why didn't you ever marry a nice Jewish girl? You had three chances. That's right, three times. Two Methodists, one Moravian. And I don't know whether it had anything to do with Christmas trees, but I have to define some of these marriages, maybe all of them, in a way about Christmas. Like, from the first marriage, there's a picture from, think of it as a souvenir, and it shows us all in the living room of our house on Calvert Street, and there's this Christmas tree, my wife, myself, our then three-year-old daughter, and we're unwrapping Christmas presents. And by the next Christmas, she was gone. She left me the house, custody, and a bunch of cheap Christmas ornaments, among other things. So what's a guy to do? It's called rebound. So I found another wife. This was the Moravian. And she had better taste than Christmas ornaments, I must tell you. We had a lot of fun for about three trees. That's all I'm going to ask you. And when she left, would you believe I inherited some more Christmas ornaments? This is a little silk carousel horse. This silk elephant. There were some nice ones. She had very good taste. She always wanted to buy better ornaments because she said, you know, these are things that are going to last. Who would know that the marriage would? You gotta have souvenirs. So, what did I do? Well, you know, go for number three. You know, what can go wrong here? She came, like all the other ones, pretty much wired for Christmas. When you marry a woman who has grown up in a Christian family, whether they're religious or not, they are wired for Christmas. They are particularly wired for Christmas trees. You gotta have a tree. Not a fake tree. I mean, they're looking wonderful. They're lifelike. You can't tell the difference. They already have the lights on them. You don't have to do any work. You just need a big enough closet to take the tree and park it for 11 and a half months a year. And then just bring it out and plug it in. No, they have to have Christmas trees. And so it begins this sort of like thinking about it, maybe around Thanksgiving, you start thinking, okay, we're going to go buy a Christmas tree. Maybe we should get one a little earlier this year because, you know, we've got all these ornaments. We have this huge collection. Her family was, I think, in a constant state of making ornaments. We have, boxes of these things. You've got to have some place to hang them. So you've got to get the tree. Well, you know what trees go for these days. I mean, back in my first marriage, I guess you could find a tree for $10, but now, I mean, you're looking 20, if you're lucky, tiny little crappy thing for the little 30, 40, you could spend $100 on a tree. Fortunately, our ceilings are low, so we tended to go more towards the $30 tree. The one that's a little flat on one side because it goes up against the wall. You don't see that part. And if it has too many branches, you can't see the ornaments. So you got to look for just that right tree. Preferably the one that's back in the corner that the guy's willing to sell you for a better price. Well, came 1994, which is roughly the middle of this marriage that, for some bizarre reason, is continuing. And I had taken a walk in the woods near our house, and I had found what looked to be the ideal Christmas tree. Now, the trick is I've got to convince my wife that this is a good idea. I mean, why do you have to buy a Christmas tree? So I suggested one December evening when we were having sort of, I guess, global warming. It was a sneak preview in 1994. It was rather pleasant out. There was the moon shining through the trees. I thought, let's just go for a walk in the woods and get our own this year. And my wife said to me, "You mean steal a tree?" I said, "No, I think maybe poach is a softer word. It's not like we're breaking into the Boy Scout lot and stealing a tree. This is in the ground. Who owns the woods? It's near, let's go get it." So she was roughly convinced. I thought it would be a romantic idea and suggested to our then 14-year-old daughter, "Well, why don't you come with us and walk in the woods and we're going to get a tree. I mean, this is just so wonderful." And she looked me square in the eyes and she said, "Why don't you buy one like everybody else?" In 14-year-old parlance, that means, "No, I'm not going. I'm going to be talking on the phone. I have better things to do." So we hopped into the station wagon and we drove the short distance to the woods near our home in Pasadena and embarked down the path. I was carrying the axe and the flashlight, leading the way, as only a good hunter should. And we got about 0.2 miles down the path when it takes this little curve, and suddenly I noticed that my wife, Bonnie, had literally fallen behind. She was on the ground, and she was hollering in pain, and she was thrashing in what looked like mud. Not a lot of mud, just a little mud. Enough mud that would just take your feet out from under you like a bad scene in a Marx Brothers movie where you hit the banana peel. And once down on the ground, she started to thrash around in the mud. And so from basically her head to her feet, she was entirely turning a new color. So I tried to help her up, and then I noticed something very odd, which was that her left hand was hanging at an angle of about 170 degrees, and there was a big shard of bone sticking up in the air. It came to me suddenly that I didn't think we were going home with a Christmas tree. What ensued was kind of nightmarish. First, I had to get her home. And I was very gallant about it. We got into the car, and I put my jacket on the seat for her to keep the car from getting muddy. And we drove home, where I attempted to remove her clothing and not hurt her hand, and put on new clothing, because the clothing she was wearing was certainly not presentable for going into an emergency room. So, a few other memories kind of jump out at me. One of them is in the orthopedic treatment room where the orthopedic surgeon is looking at her mangled wrist. He says, "That's really bad. I'm not sure I've ever seen one that bad before. I think we can fix it, but I think we have to break it the right way. So hold on to our good hands." I'm holding on, and he goes, I didn't hear the first one go, but you know, I heard it break the second time. And then he set it in a cast, and I was dispatched while she was in waiting to be discharged from the hospital. I was sent down to the all-night pharmacy with her prescription for painkillers. And I hand it to the druggist. This is like 4:30 in the morning now, and I'm beginning to look a little worse for wear, from guilt mostly. And I hand the prescription, and he looks at it and says, would you like the generic or the name brand? I said, well, what's the difference? And he said, well, the generic is $10. The name brand is $30. And I thought about it. Give it the good stuff. It's just guilt. So we got home. A few days later, still in need of a Christmas tree, I drove up the road to Ace Hardware, found an absolutely stunning Christmas tree. Maybe the best tree I have ever bought. It was $10. I strapped it on top of the station wagon, and I drove home. And I'm heading down mountain road. It's about 2 miles to the house. And I'm singing to myself some of the lyrics from Maryland's state song. You know, it's the state song, "O Christmas Tree, O Christmas Tree." Except that in the state song, you substitute the words "northern scum" for "Christmas tree." So I'm singing to myself, "O Christmas tree, O Christmas tree, I should not be so cheap with thee." I get it home. I take it off the roof of the car and tap it in the driveway to get the leaves to come out, all those branches, the beautiful needles. And I showed it off to my 14-year-old daughter. I was so proud. And she just looked me in the eye, put me right in my place. She said, "I told you so."